This is Schooled Rewired, a podcast from WHYY News. This four-part series examines how technology is reshaping the educational experience in Pennsylvania public schools. This podcast features reporting from the 2025-2026 school year. Schooled is made possible thanks to support from the William Penn Foundation. I'm Kenny Cooper, the host and reporter for this podcast.
Thank you.
About 20% of people in the U.S. are bilingual, one in five. Michaela is a student at Norristown Area High School, and she wants to be part of that group. She is studying Spanish and is preparing for a formal recognition called a Seal of Biliteracy. To earn the seal, students in Pennsylvania must demonstrate high proficiency in reading, writing, speaking, and listening in two languages by the time they graduate high school. Learning a new language is challenging enough, right? Imagine being in a classroom where students all around you are learning different languages. While Michaela is practicing Spanish, another student might be working on their Mandarin or French. It's a lot, even for the instructor.
I don't speak all of those languages.
That's Kirsten Colleton, an instructional support teacher at the high school. She is using an artificial intelligence tool that's making language learning more efficient.
A coached, tailored chatbot that could respond to them.
Students type notes, send them in, and the program responds. At first, Michaela didn't know what to think of her new pen pal.
I was a little concerned because I didn't know what really to expect.
But once she got the hang of it, it grew on her. The chatbot remembers their conversations, so Michaela can pick up her training where she last left off. She even uses it in her downtime.
So having this chat box to work with really helps me feel comfortable being able to talk to someone. So I feel like this is like really works for all of us.
Artificial intelligence has arrived in Pennsylvania classrooms. Kids are using these tools either sanctioned by their schools and teachers or at home to study, research, or cheat. How is this impacting education? And how much will the influence of AI grow? From the newsroom of WHYY, this is Schooled Rewired, a podcast documenting the story of Pennsylvania's public schools through the eyes and ears of students, parents, and teachers. I'm Kenny Cooper. This is Episode 2, Teaching in the AI Era. Michaela gives me a little demo of the program. First, she selects her target language. Then she types to the chatbot in Spanish. Mi familia es muy grande.
My family is very big.
The chatbot responds with a bunch of follow-up questions. Exactly how big is your family? What are your family members' names? What do they do for a living? Instructor Kirsten Colleton says the bots keep the convo going where her students might not.
One of the things that on the teacher end when you're tailoring your chatbot is one of the things that we notice with our Seal of Biliteracy students is that they respond very minimally. So, for instance, they might say something like, I have a big family with lots of brothers and sisters.
The students would normally end the conversation there, but the chatbot is engineered to keep asking them questions. It pushes students to use different vocabulary.
And that's just something I couldn't provide for them as a singular teacher in all of their various languages.
For the past couple of years, the Norristown Area School District has convened an AI work group to develop guardrails and policies for the new technology. This year, the district tested out three AI platforms. Norristown has about 20 teachers across its schools piloting these tools. Mary Agnew is the high school's curriculum supervisor.
The biggest barrier that we've had is people's understanding of AI, and that's why we really tried to focus on having the professional development for teachers, because when I show teachers like different ways that they can use AI, they're like, oh, I didn't know that that was what it did. I didn't know that this is the way it worked.
Another thing the AI work group adopted was an acceptable AI use scale to define when AI is permitted for an assignment and when it's not. A 4 means AI use is acceptable. A 0 means that it is not allowed at all. Michaela says AI has changed her learning experience.
I've just gotten done writing my final paper for The Great Gatsby, and I had to use like 3 journal articles in it, and journal articles are pretty tough to read. So being able to use AI to help skim through them, to summarize them, is nice.
Jennifer Thompson is the district supervisor of instructional technology and innovative programs. She says this is a critical moment for the district.
I think our goal right now is to choose one tool to invest money in. We're very thankful to have district leaders who value the importance of AI and the time and energy that's required.
Jennifer says the district will continue with training teachers and rolling out a more foundational AI course for students while reminding them of the dangers.
At the high school, we have a new course coming called Principles of AI. So that's definitely, I think we're heading in the right direction.
Norristown isn't making these decisions in a vacuum. The district is keeping an eye on its neighbors and the changing world.
We know that our students are going to graduate and go into the workforce, so we want to make sure they're prepared and able to compete with some of our, you know, local school districts, and they know how to use AI because it is in the workforce as well.
Artificial intelligence is not new. The concept of smart machines existing alongside humans is older than you might think.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
One of the most notable early instances of AI's depiction in pop culture is HAL, the hostile robot in Stanley Kubrick's film 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
But for much of the last century, artificial intelligence wasn't very intelligent. The past 30 years have seen a dramatic improvement of the technology. By the late 90s, IBM's Deep Blue had defeated chess champion Garry Kasparov. In 2011, IBM's Watson was competing on Jeopardy. AI was growing more powerful.
Now the last clue. Even a broken one of these on your wall is right twice a day. Watson.
What is clock?
Clock is correct. And with that, you move up to 23,000.
Then, OpenAI launched ChatGPT in November 2022, and everything changed. ChatGPT was widely seen as a breakthrough in generative AI technology. The chatbot could answer questions with a surprising amount of dexterity. It kicked off a boom in AI. The technology promised to radically change everything from medicine to law, but generative AI's impact on education quickly drew headlines. Students are clever, and for as long as teachers have been assigning book reports and essays, kids have been finding ways to avoid completing them. Generative AI chatbots like ChatGPT offered an easy out. Why tell a teacher that your dog ate your homework if a computer could do it for you?
I think the generative AI has highlighted one of the problems that we've seen in education for a while, and that is this focus on the product of learning rather than the process of learning.
Betty Chandy is the director for teaching and learning in AI initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania's Graduate School of Education. Since the launch of ChatGPT, one of her biggest takeaways is that education needs to evolve. She believes schools need to move away from relying so heavily on traditional essays because it's no longer easy to tell how it was produced.
So it becomes really important then for teachers to try and figure out ways to make the thinking visible.
Betty sees generative AI as a support tool for teachers in the classroom. When the technology first became mainstream, she and her colleagues began designing a program to work with the districts.
So thus, the pioneering AI in school systems program was designed, where we will work with a district and we'll start with the district's vision.
The first pilot of the program, which is called PASS for short, began in the School District of Philadelphia in March 2025. It starts with training administrators, then principals, and eventually teachers.
I think the PASS program has been successful in getting teachers to a point where they're like, I might not be an expert in AI, but I see why this is important to talk about. I want to know what my students are doing with AI. I want to have these conversations with my students about where does AI turn up in their life and how are they using it.
The program is now reaching more than 20 rural school districts in Pennsylvania, two in the greater Philadelphia region, and a pair of districts in New Jersey and Delaware.
to demystify AI, to support teacher learning, and also to understand that the AI genie is out of the bottle. You know, it's not going back in. We need to adapt.
But AI's march into classrooms is not without harsh critics and growing pains. The Pennsylvania State Education Association, or PSEA, is the state affiliate of the nation's largest teachers union. It represents more than 177,000 educators across the Keystone State. Christopher Clayton is the director of education services for the union. He says member opinions on AI run the gamut, but they are united on one message.
I think we have to ensure that humans stay at the center of the teaching and learning process first and foremost. And, you know, if there's any one benefit of the pandemic, it is we know what happens when you take human teachers away from kids.
He says teachers' concerns about being replaced are not unfounded. Christopher pointed to Unbound Academy, an AI-powered cyber charter school that has been trying to make its way into Pennsylvania. The model promises to condense the entire curriculum into 2 hours of AI-powered learning a day with a human guide. But like Betty, Christopher sees AI's expansion into education as inevitable.
Is this AI sort of revolution going to happen to us via big tech or with us this time?
He compared it to social media and cell phones in school. He says the education system did not take a proactive approach in addressing the collateral damage of prolonged cell phone usage. Maybe if teachers show students the right way to use AI, a better future lies ahead. He says that requires empowering teachers to have a choice on how they want to optimize student learning.
Today, maybe I want kids to not use tech or AI at all, and all I want on their desk is a piece of paper, a pencil, a book, and I want them to handwrite. But that might mean Wednesday, maybe there's a specific AI tool that I want them to use that's going to help them optimize their writing or be a research assistant or whatever, and I want to give them access to that tool.
He says AI is likely here to stay, shaping our children's future.
There may not be a more powerful force unshaping that world.
This is Schooled. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about AI in education. Coming up, is AI safe? One researcher says the risk of AI outweigh the benefits when it comes to student learning.
They're undermining kids' ability to think critically and independently and have trusting relationships with their peers and students in the classroom, which is needed to take advantage of the benefits, which are often through very strategic applications in teaching and learning in the classroom.
We'll be right back. This is Schooled, an education podcast from the newsroom of WHYY. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about AI. In January 2026, researchers at the Brookings Institution made national headlines with a provocative new report about AI in schools. To find out more, I spoke with Rebecca Winthrop, one of the authors. We're speaking to you on the heels of a major report that you and your colleagues at the Center for Universal Education released about artificial intelligence, or AI, at the start of 2026. This report is a pre-mortem, but we usually think of post-mortems or why something failed after the fact. Why did you and your fellow researchers feel it was necessary to examine AI in education before it has completely settled in the classroom?
The main reason we wanted to do this, Kenny, is so we don't repeat the same mistakes we did with social media. If we all could go back in time a decade ago, people who know about children, know about adolescent mental health, know about child development could have told you that social comparisons in adolescence, for example, could be quite toxic if done poorly. And so we want to make sure that this time round, with this incredibly powerful technology, the people who know, love, care, and spend days and days with kids, parents, teachers, social workers, coaches, you know, all the people that kids in kids' lives are at the table when thinking about how generative AI can be used well, ideally, for kids' learning and development.
So what are the foundational premises of this report? Guide us through the methodology.
So our main question was, are we on the right track when it comes to the rollout of generative AI for students? We were looking at K-12 students. We were looking at their learning and their development. And we know, we have core premises, which is we know how kids develop and learn, and that is in relationships, that we have evolved as humans for millennia to learn together with other people, and that human relationships are foundational. We also know about education and schooling and the role it plays in society. And a second foundational premise is that kids are more than little mini cognitive processing machines, that a very important role of schools is to pass on academic knowledge and information, but there's lots of other roles that schools play, such as providing opportunities for young people to learn to live with other people who are different from themselves. We found this out in COVID. You know, this is a time and a place and a space in a child's lives where they're introduced to people who are outside of their immediate family and neighborhood, honestly. So there's a civic purpose to schools. And the third thing we know, again, all of this is from decades well-established research. Another third premise is that technology is not pedagogy. And what I mean by that is technology just amplifies what's there. Just because you add technology to the classroom or put it in front of students doesn't mean it changes their teaching and learning experience. It's how you use technology that is the most important indicator of any type of impact.
So big picture, what did you and your fellow colleagues find in your premortem?
What we found was that currently, and we were looking at the trajectory, the risks overshadow the benefits in terms of AI, generative AI implementation for students' learning and development. And that is largely because the risks are of a very different nature. They're undermining kids' ability to think critically and independently and have trusting relationships with their peers and students in the classroom, which is needed to take advantage of the benefits, which are often through very strategic applications in teaching and learning in the classroom.
So break this down for us a little bit more. What are the potential benefits of embracing AI in education, and what are the potential risks?
So we did find there was lots of benefits, actually. They just mainly are related to a very narrow use of generative AI. That could be a teacher using AI tools to make their administrative burdens go away. Maybe not totally go away, but diminish in the hours they do. Teachers are really overburdened with lots of tasks they have to do. So AI is great. It saves a ton of teacher time. It also can be great for teachers in really spotting where students get stuck. So in assessment, it's hard actually to figure out where kids are at when you just do a point in time, like a quiz on Friday, and maybe they had a bad day or didn't sleep well, and it doesn't necessarily tell you why they got their answer wrong. So generative AI could really help with that. That could be really game-changing. It also can be used, again, in a very narrow, targeted way with vetted content to help kids stay engaged and understand material more than they would.
She says this could be for multilingual learners who might struggle to access content because they're learning a new language and learning content at the same time. She says it could also be helpful for kids with different learning disabilities.
The risks are when young people use AI in a way that's not narrowly and strategically deployed, but what we would call wide AI use, which is young people themselves having direct conversations, maybe for a long period of time, not with adult supervision, not with vetted content, with like an AI chatbot or an AI companion or friend, which they can access through social media or in various other platforms. And again, those chatbots or AI friends are not really designed for learning, and they're not really designed for kids. They can also be very unsafe. But there's other examples that perhaps for learning we're even more worried about, which affects the majority of kids, which is basically kids using AI to do their thinking for them. And it's not going to help a young person develop their brain, their habits, their ability to think independently and critically by using AI to take shortcuts in their homework or their classroom assignments. So the cognitive offloading and shortcutting cognitive development is really concerning. there's a whole other suite of risks. They come around dependency. Young people often told us they felt like they couldn't start their work because most kids are using ChatGPT right there with them, and they felt like they couldn't think without it. There's motivational questions. One of the things I'm incredibly worried about is how demotivating this seems to be for kids. So many kids told us, and I'm out talking about this report in school districts and schools, and often when I visit schools and talk to kids about AI, they say, you know, we're here to learn and we need to learn about this stuff, but like, it can do everything we're doing. So what's the point? Why should I be doing this? And so I'm worried about AI creating a lot of kids in what I would call passenger mode. I've done research with my co-author, our book, The Disengaged Teen. We identified these different modes of engagement, and already 50% of kids in 2024 were in passenger mode. And I worry it'll just create a lot more kids in passenger mode.
So with that in mind, how should parents, teachers, policymakers confront this moment? You know, what recommendations does the report lay out?
I do think we're not going to put the genie in back in the bottle as a globe, but I absolutely think that we still have time. This is early days to figure out how we want to harness this for good and how we do not want it out in the world. For example, the UK recently just banned sycophantic AI from schools. And the EU has an AI Act where it really says a bunch of stuff with AI is not acceptable for students and learning in schools. So it's possible. We don't seem to be heading in that direction at a national level.
A lot more
here
time
in the United States,
perhaps
we're making
going
sure they acquire
the opposite
knowledge
direction.
But there's a number of states or in-class exams starting to put legislation out there. So I would definitely say for every parent, teacher, you know,
to
kid,
solve a problem.
You know, if
that
will be very
concerned about this, get
involved
to,
in some of the
know,
advocacy initiatives because it's not
people.
A done deal at all.
So
now,
how important
the second thing
is
I would
it that
say
schools,
is that there's
parents,
absolutely ways
and policymakers
to
get this right?
This,
what are the stakes
so,
here?
So for students and for learning so that we can get the good stuff and not have the bad stuff. You don't need to take it all together. One easy, easy way is to make sure companies put safeguards on their products. And then ultimately, I think at the end of the day, we do need to lean into teaching and learning strategies that can't be hacked by AI. If teachers are going to assign stuff that students can do in 1 minute by putting into ChatGPT, which is what most students in our study we found used, don't assign it. You know, spend a lot more time perhaps making sure they acquire knowledge through oral presentations or in-class exams. And then most importantly, take that knowledge and help them try to apply it to solve a problem. That will be very hard for AI to, you know, do for people.
So how important is it that schools, parents, and policymakers get this right? What are the stakes here?
I mean, the stakes are pretty high, Kenny. I mean, I worry a lot about if we don't bend the arc because, you know, I worry about all the evidence around lack of critical thinking. There's a lot of bias in AI. One of the studies, just to give you an example, is, you know, this was a researcher who put an essay in pretending to be a student and said, please give me feedback on my essay. And in one case, the chatbot knew that the student liked rap music. Same essay, the chatbot knew the student liked classical music. And the student who likes classical music gets a full grade level higher, more sophisticated feedback than the kid who likes rap music. So there's a ton of bias. So the big stakes are kids are less able to think critically. We're driving inequality through bias. There's misinformation they're susceptible for. They're more lonely and less able to socialize and form relationships that last and develop good friendships. And frankly, less able to take feedback in life, but also when they get to the working world. You need to be able to take feedback when you show up at work and have a boss. And so they're less equipped overall to thrive in the world and to contribute to society.
Rebecca Winthrop is a senior fellow and director of the Center for Universal Education at the Brookings Institution. I'm Kenny Cooper, and this is Schooled. We're talking about AI in education. Coming up, how one school is trying to balance the old with the new.
In my classroom, what I like to do is have non-text units. So it's back to the old textbook. We're opening up literally textbooks on our desks still, and we're handwriting with pencil. So sometimes we shift the gear.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Schooled. I'm Kenny Cooper. We're talking about AI in education. The high school I visited in Norristown is in the piloting stage for AI tools. I also wanted to find a district farther along in the timeline. The New Hope Solberry School District in Bucks County serves a little more than 1,200 students. The district boasts a 96.4% graduation rate. More than 95% of students either attend college or head straight into the workforce.
Hi,
hello? Hi, my name is Kenny Cooper. I'm a reporter with WHYY.
Sure, come on in.
The district is not shying away from AI. Administrators formed an AI think tank shortly after ChatGPT launched. The goals of the think tank were to create an AI literacy program, change teaching practices, develop AI use guidelines, and support families with resources. The district is using Google Gemini. In Jeff Petzak's classroom, 7th grade social studies students are preparing for a test later in the week. Gemini won't be giving them the answers. Jeff is at the front of the classroom, showing students how to upload maps into the AI's learning coach function. Then he explains what prompt he's going to use, or what he's going to say to the AI to get his desired answer.
Well, we want to tell it who we are, so it doesn't make a mistake and try to quiz you as a college senior or high school student. So we're going to tell it that we're a 7th grader preparing for a quiz. We want it to act like something, so we're going to tell it to act like a tutor to guide us through the understanding of these attached maps. How do we want to study? Well, we want flashcards, interactive maps, mnemonic devices, and multiple choice quizzes. So go ahead and just copy that prompt for me.
This isn't actually a regular occurrence.
This is one of the few times I've used it in the classroom. It's really just introducing the Gemini to these 7th graders, having them play around with it freely, just open to explore it.
He says the students get a little more engaged when they see the AI, so he uses it to spruce up his lesson plan from time to time. It's his curveball. This wasn't a pitch he added overnight. Students used it on him first. Soon after ChatGPT launched in 2022, he noticed a change in essays that his students were producing.
It's pretty obvious when 7th and 8th graders are writing papers and they're coming out with these transition words and content that's just not what we've been teaching.
Amanda Benokin is the district's director of education.
Students have always tried to cheat or get around assignments. That's, you know, something that's been happening for decades. But our approach was, first, the kids need to know how to use it in an appropriate, ethical way. But also, we as teachers need to look at how we're assessing students and change the task.
This means that assignments that could be easily completed with AI were out of the question. Teachers had to find a way to grade the performance of learning rather than the product. Caitlin Kuiper, a technology and curriculum specialist for New Hope Solberry, says the early days of the AI expansion required a lot of trust. She says some teachers were initially very hesitant to engage with AI.
And I think in the last 3 years, we're seeing this evolution of people realizing, like, okay, this isn't going to replace me. I need to harness it to better my craft.
She says this has accelerated innovation.
We have an English teacher, Josh Hesney, who uses the Brisk extension, the AI Assist extension. And in a nutshell, it shows you a 60 speed, the evolution of the kid's paper that they're writing. So you can see every cut, paste, edit, how long it took them to write, blah, 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 blah. He can see the entire process of how a student wrote something, and it's not a gotcha moment when he sees a giant cut and paste. It's a, hey, come in during lunch and learn. Let's talk about this and have a restorative conversation. Let me educate you on why that's not the best way to do this. So we're now seeing this insurgence of, like, really holistic, restorative learning opportunities in conversations with students and teachers over it.
In other words, some teachers here are using AI to combat the misuse of AI. But sometimes, Jeff says, you have to blend the old with the new.
If you have them write on paper, you go back to the old school, write it down, analyze it with a peer or have a group where you're peer editing it, and then they type it after it. I find that the AI usage drops by 90%. In my classroom, what I like to do is have non-text units. So it's back to the old textbook. We're opening up literally textbooks on our desks still, and we're handwriting with pencil. So sometimes we shift the gear.
This isn't to say that all of the concerns that teachers had about AI are gone. many of them are still there. Worries about academic integrity, establishing foundational learning skills, and even fears of too much screen time have not disappeared. Amanda says it is important to have an open and honest dialogue about those concerns. She wants teachers to be upfront during training sessions. She believes it's the only way they'll reach a solution.
We keep looking out for experts in this area, and we're finding that we have to figure some of this stuff out on our own. So I think just using the talent and expertise in the room of leaning on strong educational practice to address some of the needs is really going to be how we overcome, you know, the broader concerns that happen with AI.
Still, the district believes it's ahead of the pack on AI. But instead of charging through the wilderness of AI alone, New Hope Solberry wants to be a North Star.
We're struggling sometimes to find the answers in the guidebook since there really isn't one. So our district is looking at hosting a regional AI summit here next year.
A free summit for educators to share what is working and what is not working. Whether you view it as a long-awaited expansion or a worrisome incursion, AI is here. But during my visit to New Hope Solberry, I was still surprised to see just how much hasn't changed in the school experience. Most notably, the teachers caught my attention. You could see them engaging and talking with students at a time when people are burying their faces in phones. It reminded me of something Christopher Clayton said earlier in the episode. What keeps him up most at night is the possibility that the educational experience will lose its human touch. He says a fist bump in the morning can say a lot.
I'm glad you're here. I value you, and I am empathic and connected to you as a human being.
Over here are, you guys, you got your wheels?
Logan might need them. They're a bit too thin.
That's okay. Get back on the thing and do it again.
Walking through the halls of New Hope Solberry, I could feel that. I could hear it, too. By pure luck, as I was beginning to exit the building, I overheard the muffled sound of music coming from a classroom. What I initially thought was a bunch of students was actually a band of teachers. They go by the name Meatwagon. One of the members just so happened to be the teacher that was using AI to catch students misusing AI. I'll let their cover of American Girl take us home. Is a production of WHYY News in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Kenny Cooper. I am a reporter for WHYY News. Our executive producer is Sarah Glover, WHYY's Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Our editor is Maru Smith-Abora, with additional editing from Mike and Scott. Mike Schiffler and Diana Martinez are our engineers. Our producer is Alan Tu. Fact-checking from Emily Neal. Research support from Natalie Tsukinagwa. Funding for this podcast was provided by the William Penn Foundation. Please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts and share on social media. Visit whyy.org for more education news. Thanks for listening.